holding on Wamajumawama to Aleph, the second line. We learned yesterday that we discussed the question of Bia B'Mikzas, and a person comes into the Azara partially, so they don't walk completely in, but they stick in a body part or something. So we brought up the two possibilities. One is that Bia B'Mikzas is not Shma Bia, therefore, for example, therefore a Tomei Midaraisa might be able to do Smicha. What we said actually, we said that no, since the pasuk says not smicha but the tahorim, so we had a braisa that said that smicha has to be done by tahorim by definition because they have to be inside the azara, whereas shchita in principle could be done by tmeim except for the fact that we had a hekish, and then we said that no, it's not a real hekish, it's only zirabanim, and we said the reason why tomei could conceivably do shchita because they could use a long knife. If we say via mikzas shmabia, then that would explain why a tamei is not able to do smicha. Then we brought the opinion of Rav Chisda, who learned it the other way around, who said that since it's a given that shchita has to be with tahorim, because you have to be tahor, you have to actually be in the azara to do the shchita, you can't be using a long knife, then therefore the hekesh teaches us that smicha has to be done by tahorim as well, and that would go specifically according to Shimon HaTimni, who says that when you have to be lifting Hashem. On the other hand, smicha conceivably a tamei could do it because he could stick in his hand and do smicha. And then that led us into a discussion about the whole question of when a mitzora stands in shayar nikanor and sticks in his ear and his thumb and his toe to have the blood and the oil applied to them. Does that change if he's also a tevul yom from being a balkan? So the point is though that in the course of the discussion we had Ullah's statement in the name of Rish Lakish that, yes, if a Tomei sticks his hand into the Azara, he gets Malkus. Because we said we make a Hekesh between going into the Beis Mikdash and touching Kodesh. Before Kodesh Leis Tigav El HaMikdash Leis Tavoy, it says by a Yeledis, by a woman who gave birth, that she should not touch any Kodesh or go into the Beis Mikdash. So just like touching involves only part of your body, so going into the Kodesh implies only sticking in part of your body, and we're saying that that's still after. From the Yoledis, it applies to anything that's lifer. The Yoledis is one of a category of people who are Mechusrei Kapara, who first of all, she has in common with the Zav, and she has in common with the Zav and the Zava, and the Masora, a number of things, including all of them are Tumah Yotza Olam Megufoy and the Barperi. All of them are Tumah Yotza Olam Megufoy. All of them, the Tumah comes out of their own body. All of them are Metame. All of them are matame things that they touch on, or that they sit on, or lean on, or what have you. And all of them need and all of them need a kapara. All of them need a carbon in order to be complete and tahor. So therefore, yeah.
Do we say the expansion is major?
Yes, it's the same kind of thing as it's a binyan ab. Once the Torah tells us it's by your ledus, then it applies to all the other ones in that category. So can we say that the following braisa supports what Ullah is saying? The braisa says, "Kol smicha shahoyushon." Any time in the Beis Mikdash, whenever smicha was done on the head of a korban, where we know and we know by an ola and by most other korbanos, there's supposed to be before it's shechted, the owner of the korban does smicha on it. In general, we said before by korbanos tibur, you very rarely have that. The only time you have smicha by korbanos tibur is the parhelam davashal tibur, the one of Yom Kippur actually does the kohen do smicha, and I don't think so. By the lazod does smicha, but not the sorer lashem.
Right.
Yeah, but that's different. We're talking about as far as korbanos. The sorer lazod is not a korban. As far as korbanos. It's not a carbon, it's thrown off the cliff over there by his also. It's not a carbon. But as far as Korban Sibur, so you have the parhel and Davish of Sibur, and three members of the Sanhedrin lean their hands on it. But other than that, you don't really have that. When it comes to Korban Yachid, most of the time, smicha is done with a few exceptions. Korban Pesach is one of them, the Bechor is another, we'll learn later on in that, we're going to learn in Ezra and Mekayman, we'll talk about which ones do and which ones don't get smicha. But most Korbanos do require smicha. In the case of a chassos or an osham, the person during the smicha says vidui on what averus he did, that what averus he did that he's bringing the carbon for. In the case of an ola, also he would say vidui for whatever esters he missed or loisas and lachshin did for esters. We learned back in the first parak. In the case of a shlomim or a toda, that Amram says he thanks and praises Hashem during the smicha. Whatever it is, something smicha is generally done and it has to be done right before shchita, as we're going to say. So kol smicha shahar yisham. For all smichas that were done on Korbanos, koda aleihem ani take it for smicha shchita. By all of them, we apply to them the rule that says that smicha has to be immediately adjacent to the shchita. In other words, they have to be in the same location. The animal has to actually be in the place where it's going to be shechted. That's what we learned back. We learned a couple of dozen blocks ago, for example. But that's why when it came to the power of the Kohen Gadol, actually there he had to do smicha on it also. I think, but okay, the power of the Kohen Gadol is a semi-private korban, because it's for himself and the Kohenim. But whatever. So we had over there that it had to be placed in the azara, in the place where it was going to be shechted. Somebody says it has to be shechted north of the mizbeach, and then he would be makabel the blood and take it into the heichal from there. Anyway, so usually you have to have take it for smicha shchita, that immediately adjacent to the smicha the shchita takes place. Chut mizu, except for the one involving the mesorah is osham specifically. Now that took place at Sharon Nikonor, the eastern gate of the Azara. The Masorah is standing there inside the thickness of the gate, inside the width of the gate. Now the Masorah, ex-Masorah now, is not able to go into the Azara proper until there's sprinkled on his behalf from the blood of the Chassah, from the blood of the Osha. So up until that point, he's in the Chutz Kapara. So therefore, he has to stand in Sha'ar Nikonor, and therefore, what he does is, so when it comes to his ear, thumb, and toe, then he sticks them in, and they apply it. But the point is, in other words, that we're saying he can't do, so in other words, though, so what we're saying is that, what does he do? We have to bring the animal to him, for him to do smicha, and then we take it to where it's going to be shechted. So there we have it.
Leaves the
Azara? Not leaves the Azara, per se, but it stands right there next to the gate. And
someone
has to go in and out? He's standing there inside the gate. The Masorah is standing there inside the gate. They bring the animal over to him. They bring it over to him. He does smicha. Then you bring it back in to the place where it's going to be shechted. He does smicha. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so that's the question. We're going to see. That's the reason why we're bringing this is, according to, if we said not like Ullah, if we said via the mix of Loshma via, then it wouldn't be, then we don't necessarily have to move the animal around. He could stretch his hand in, he could be standing on one side in the thickness of the gate. He puts his hands into the Azara and does smicha, and that would be fine. The fact that the Braita is saying he can't do that implies that via the mix of Shma via. That's what we're going to say. So therefore there's no choice but to bring the animal to him, let him do smicha, and then they take it to where it's supposed to be shechted, north of the Mizbeach, because it's an Osham. It's Kodesh-Kodeshim, has to be shechted on the north side of the Azar. So of necessity, therefore, the smicha has to be separate from the shechita over there, because he can't come any closer. Incidentally, by the way, Tosfos mentions in this connection, in Sota, the Gemara mentions over there that take it from the Tzilos Yadayim Bracha, that it's shortly after the Tzilos Yadayim has to be the Bracha, which means both the Bracha Hamotzi and also before the one Kohen and wash their hands before Duchening. So Tosfos discusses over there how taketh is taketh. When we say immediately, how long, what's the maximum amount of time there can be between them. Since the Gemara is talking about it, no. So Tosfos mentions over there like this. Since we see in our Gemara, as we're going to say in a second, that the distance from where the Masorah is allowed to stand, which is in Sha'ar Nikonor, until the area north of the Mizbeach, the distance there is 22 amos, that implies that up to 22 amos can be considered taken. Here we're saying that having to go 22 amos or more amounts to, it's not taketh l'smicha shchita anymore, therefore it amounts to 22 amos or more is not taketh anymore.
From the gate, okay, the north is here?
Yes, so the gate is on the eastern side of the Azara.
Right.
You have then in front of him, you have the strip, which is the Ezer Sisro, which is 11 amos wide, and the length of the Azara. Then you have the Ezer Karinim, same thing, a strip next to it. Then you have the Mizbeach, and then there's the area north of the Mizbeach. So that is 22 amos distance, because you have 11 and 11 before you reach that area north of the Mizbeach.
11
for Ezer Sisro, 11 for Ezer Karinim. So therefore, you have to have 22 amos.
There's no beginning because it's part of
Ezer Sisro. It's part of Ezer Sisro, right. I mean, even the Israelim, when we call it Ezer Sisro and Ezer Kohen, we mean the normal places where they're allowed to go at any time. I mean, you have, at home with their tar. You have, for example, the Yisrael is able to go closer to Mizbeach to get shechting a carbon, as we said, take up the Smicha Shchita, for example. So if he's bringing a Chatas or an Asham or any other Kachim, necessarily he has to go on the north side of Mizbeach, which is going to be outside the Ezer Sisro. But that's, he goes there only for that purpose, and then he goes to the Ezer Sisro to observe the rest of it. The point is...
And the northern part of the Ezer Sisro to watch his carbon?
No, he stays. He can stay any place in the Ezer Sisro, but he's still, that's not north of the Mizbeach. We're going to see in a second. We discussed before, and then we're going to mention it briefly now, that you have three different opinions, what area of the Azara is considered north of the Mizbeach. We mentioned that a few weeks ago. But anyway, so the point is, Tosfos discusses over there, given that our Braisa is of the opinion, as we're going to see in a minute, that north of the Mizbeach means exactly due north of the Mizbeach, not further east or not northeast or northwest of the Mizbeach. Exactly north of the Mizbeach, exactly due north of the Mizbeach. Then there's 22 amos between that and Sharmik and Ur. Therefore, that implies, our Braisa therefore seems to be implying that once you reach 22 amos, it's no longer case. Which therefore, that comes up again as far as the washing before Dukhaning, that it should be as close as possible to Dukhaning. Within the time it takes to walk 22 amos, yeah. And also, therefore, it means, as far as washing for bread, that it should be within that there should be no more than the time it takes to walk 22 amos between the washing and the bread. Now, actually...
It's not the distance.
No, it's the time. But actually, there is some further discussion about that, because the Magen Avraham points out that actually, no, on the basis of our Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that on the basis of what our Gemara is going to go on to say over here about that not necessarily, maybe you could check it at a closer point, doesn't it come out that just the fact that you're bringing it from inside the Shan Mikano to out to into the Ezer Sisro already constitutes a lack of take it, even though it's right adjacent to each other, so even less than 22 hours. So they talk about it, Karinim talk about it.
More than
22 amos. Because you have, just from one side of the gate to the other, is already considered not so much taken. So they talk about maybe the Machila versus B'diavad, that there's two levels of take it. In other words, really what it should be is you wash and immediately afterwards, in other words, it comes out from that, you should wash and immediately after that, you say the Bracha Amos. But if you're, and also actually another distinction they say is maybe the difference is because the inside, the thickness of Shal Nikano versus the Azara are two different Rishurs. So that's different. If you're going from one Rishurs into another, that's different. You don't necessarily have the 22 Amal leeway.
Since you're talking about washing, can you wash, make the Raha, and then go and sit down 22 Amos away?
Well, you're talking about what? Make the bracha until today? No, the point is that from the washing until the bracha amos, you take it from until today in bracha, there should be less than the time it takes to walk 22 amos. From the washing until the bracha amos. Right. That's how it should be. Practically speaking, we see that many people don't do that because you have a lot of people washing and you really don't have a choice. But that's how it's really supposed to be. That's on the basis of our Gemara. Okay, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Okay. So how is this braisa a proof to what Ullah is saying? Because if you're going to say, not like Ullah, if you're going to say that bia b'miksa, that him sticking in his hand is not considered bia, then what's the problem? Let him stick his hand in through beyond. No, that's the proof. That's how this braisa is a proof for Ullah. Ullah was saying bia b'miksa shmabia. We see that from this braisa, evidently, because we have to change the usual way of doing things. We have to bring the animal to Shaar Nikanor, inside Shaar Nikanor, that is, to allow him to do the smicha over there, because otherwise he can't stick in his hand into the Azara to do it. So then that must be, because the other mixus is Shmabia. So that proves what Ullah is saying. Because otherwise, otherwise he could be standing on this side of the threshold of Shaar Nikanor, stick his hand in over the threshold, do smicha, and it wouldn't be a problem. Obviously, if we're saying that doesn't work, then yeah. The answer is not necessarily. Not necessarily is that a proof, because this braisa could be according to Rabbi Yosi Bibi Hoda, the Omer Merachat Sofen, where Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda said, we had a three-way machlokas earlier in the Masechta, a couple of weeks back, we had a three-way machlokas, which area of the Azara is considered soft. Again, you have three different zones over there. We had Rashi gave us a diagram over there. So you have, here's Shai Mifiner. You have Ezra Sistrel and Ezra Toyonim are in the script over here. Then you have the Mizbeach. Now, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda.
So that's the east.
No,
I'm sorry, that's the west.
The west is Mizbeach. Now, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda holds that only the area due north of the Mizbeach is Sotham. Not northwest of it, closer to the Heichal, not northeast of it, closer to the wall, only the area exactly north of it, exactly facing the Mizbeach. Right. Whereas then we had Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon had said that also the area closer to the front of the Heichal is also counted.
But not facing exactly.
So not, so right, but in other words, not just north, but also northwest. And Rebbe added also northeast. Now, so we could argue, if this Braitha goes according to Rebbe, then you're right. It would prove that Biba Mixas Shmabia, because we would say we're not even allowing him to stick his hands in over the threshold, even though otherwise we could conceivably put the animal right here. That would be suffering. And he could be right here, right inside the gate, on the north side of the Azar. So if the Braitha was according to Rebbe, then that would be fine. And then we would be able to prove, since the Braitha is saying you cannot do that, would imply that that would imply that Biba Mixas Shmabia, and therefore we have no choice but to bring the animal into the thickness of the gate. However, not necessarily. The Braitha could be like Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, or Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, for that matter. Da'amah Merachat Sofen, he says that the area, the zone that's considered Sofen, is further away from Shaar Nifiner. Again, 22 amos further away, because you have the width of the Ezra Yisrael and the width of the Ezra Tayanim, from between Shaar Nifiner and the Mizbeach.
So further away means facing the
meaning, in other words, that, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says only the area exactly due north of the Mizbeach is suffering. So therefore, according to him and according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, that means that zone begins 22 amos away from Shaar Nifiner. Therefore, so we could say like this, in other words, if the Braitha is like Rebbe, who holds the entire northern half of the Azara is considered Safon, then fine. Then only if we say that Biba Mixas Shmabia, wouldn't we be saying, nevertheless, we can't do that, he can't stick his hands into the Azara, therefore, of necessity, we bring the animal into Shaar Nifiner and he does the Smithadim. But we could equally well say that the Braitha is considered Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, why are we moving the animal? Yes, he could stick his hands in through the gate. But that still wouldn't do any good as far as checking the animal there, because that area is not considered soft on the point of it. So therefore, of necessity, yes, he can stick his hands in through the gate.
There's two ways to understand
the Braitha, right. One, that he can't stick his hands in through the gate, because that would be the Mixas, but that would require us to say that area is considered soft, and that would only be a point of Debbie. Or we could say he could stick in his hands through the gate, but that area is not suffering, which is like a Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why we're not having him stay. That's why we have to move the animal. Even if he does stick his hands in and does it right there on the inside, it still has to be moved 22 hours to. So no proof one way or the other from that Braitha to. Okay, but you might ask, well, if you're going to say the problem is, according to Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, the problem is that if you're going to say the only problem is practicality, that suffering is too far away from the gate. But in and of itself, point of Yosef of Yehuda, you could argue that maybe he would be allowed to stick it in his hand. Well, then we have an alternative. V'le'ev et pishbash. Why don't we make somewhere on the northern wall of the Azara, somewhere in that section of the northern wall of the Azara, which is opposite the Mizbeach, let's build a small gate in there. Pishbash is a small gate where it'll be big enough for him to be able to stand there, stick his hands in and do the smicha, and then they can do take up
with the northern opening.
Yeah, in other words, exactly that. Like this, instead of having them stand in Shaar Nifiner, which is on the east, put a pishbash over here, right? Let him be able to stand over there, stick his hands in, and then you can have take up with smicha shaita. The fact that the Braitha is not mentioning that alternative seems to show still that he can't stick his hands in. The answer is right. The answer is no, because Abaya and Rava, the Ami Tazayu, Abaya and Rava both say no. The reason why the Braitha doesn't entertain that idea is because the exact floor plan of the Bais Mikdash is given min Hashemayim and can't be changed. The Pasuk says, David HaMelech says to Shlomo, when he's giving him the instructions about the Bais Mikdash, Hakol b'chstav miyad Hashem olai tiskil, kol malachas atavnis. All of it is in writing from the hand of Hashem, who made me able to understand it. All of the work of the blueprint. So therefore, David describes to Shlomo how I put together all the material you need to build the Beis Mikdash, etc. And he says he describes all of the various components that are going to go into Beis Mikdash. There's going to be buildings. There's going to be second floors. There's going to be chambers, etc., etc. And he summarizes and says the whole floor plan was given to me. Men was given to me. Min Hashemayim. He learned it from Shmuel.
Some of the
Mephoroshim actually said that there was. Shmuel didn't just make it up on his own. It means that it was, so some Mephoroshim would explain that it was given the Nevuah to Shmuel. It was given to him directly as a Nevuah, and then he transmitted it to David. The other possibility is that, yeah, it was given to Moshe, who transmitted it to Yeshua, who transmitted it, etc., until it came down to Shmuel, who gave it to David. Whatever it is, the point is that the point is that the blueprint of the Beis Hamikdash can't be altered. So we can't just go and make a pish-posh for this particular reason.
Would be given to Israel rather than to a Kohen.
Well, David may be Israel, but he's not just any Israel. He's the king of the Jewish people. He's the one who's going to be... Fine, so what? He's not going to be doing the Avodah there. He's going to be putting together the material to build it. The Tzal was also Jehovah's Witness. No, everybody, all the Jewish people are obligated in the midst of building this mikdash. Only the kohanim work there, but only the kohanim serve there and do the avodah. But everybody is involved in the midst of building it. Now Tosfos points out the question. So first of all, Tosfos points out a couple of things. We learned in Shavuot about the whole thing. We're mosif in al hazoris that if the Sanhedrin and the king and the urim v'tumim etc. all give authorization, we can add to the size of the hazoris. What happened to this pasuk over here? The answer is that they can't just do it really nearly. If they find a pasuk that implies that it should be that from which they can learn that it needs to be changed, then they can do that. And Tosfos gives an example. For example, the Gemara mentions in Sukkah that you have the famous balcony that they put up every year for Simchas Beis HaSheva, in the Etzes Nashim. So like this, you had Simchas Beis HaSheva took place every afternoon and night of Sukkot in the Etzes Nashim. But the Gemara mentions over there originally there was a problem with men and women mixing, so therefore they built this balcony. And the Gemara says there, what happened to Kol Hakol B'Chsav Miyad Hashem, what happened to not altering the plan? And the answer is they found the pasuk that shows that you have to keep men and women separate at such events, and therefore on that basis they had the authorization to add to the structure of the Beis Hamikdash and build this balcony. So originally the Gemara describes that originally what they did is they had men. At one point they had the men inside the Ezel Snoshim and the women outside it. Then they had the other way around, but whatever it is, there was too much mingling, so therefore they had to build the balcony. Whatever, the point is, over here, there's no particular pasuk from which they can show that there would need to be this pishkosh, this door, in order for the Mitzvah to be able to stand there, so therefore it can't be done. Now, Tosfos points out, the Gemara is going to say later on, that actually the smicha, that we're saying that the Masorah does smicha on its korban, that smicha is not necessarily required on a daraisa level. If it was required on a daraisa level, sure, then that gives us license to build a pishkosh. But since, as the Gemara is going to say later, it's not actually required on a daraisa level, we'll see why, too. So therefore, there's no license to build a pishkosh in order to make it possible to do it. So therefore, we're back to, we have to stand in Shaar Nikana, and therefore, if he is going to be doing smicha, necessarily it'll have to be not take up the shchita. It'll have to be the animal will have to be moved afterwards. Again, not necessarily because he can't put his hands in, but because in any case, the coincidence of Yosef before that, it's going to have to be moved to a different part of the Azara anyway.
No
proof one way or the other, right? Okay. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion is why are we saying that he can't stick his hands in? Isn't that because via the mikdash is shmabia? So another version is ikadamri amra desif. No, the reason why he can't stick his hands in is a different reason. Not necessarily because via the mikdash. The reason is because kolas tzaymech roshe v'ruah machnis. Because any time a person does smicha on a korban, he has to stick in, and he has to have his head and most of his body in the azara. My time, and now why is that? Kol koichei bein. The reason for that is because when you do smicha, you have to do it with all your strength. So therefore, of necessity, his torso, which is ruboy, has to be inside in order for him to be able to press down on the animal's head.
Therefore,
So therefore, so if he doesn't do that, then it's not really a smicha. So therefore, since obviously as a tome, as a machotzer kiporin, he can't come most of the way inside, even if we don't agree with Ulo, we're still going to say that you can't mostly come into the Azara when you're tome. Therefore, of necessity, we have to bring the korban to him rather than him sticking his hands in to lean on the korban, because sticking his hands in is not going to allow him to put the pressure on it that's required anyway.
So again,
no proof one way or the other. Maybe conceivably he would be allowed to stick his hands in. However, in the case of smicha, that's not going to do us any good anyway. Therefore, of necessity, therefore we bring the animal to him in shayin nikana rather than him reaching inside and doing smicha. No proof one way or the other. So what Ola is saying about bia b'mikta.
The fact that he's bringing his whole torso is not like...
No, that's the point. He can't put in his whole torso. To just put in his hand wouldn't do any good because it wouldn't be kol koichai. So therefore, there's no choice but to bring the animal into the thickness, into the width of shayin nikana for him to do the smicha. We're there. He can stand there with his head and his torso there in the thickness of shayin nikana. No, it's not necessarily. No, again, one way of looking at it is that the halacha is like ula, via b'miktas shmaviyah. Therefore, even if it weren't for the problem of kol koichai, he can't stick any body part into the azara, except for what the Torah says specifically, namely to have the blood and the oil applied to his ear, thumb, and toe. Therefore, of necessity, we bring the animal into the thickness of shayin nikana for him to do smicha on. The other way of looking at it is maybe he could stick his hands in. Maybe that wouldn't be considered bia. He wouldn't be chayav malchus for it. But it wouldn't do any good because that's not going to allow him to do a smicha b'chol kosei. Smicha b'chol kosei implies that he has his head and most of his torso inside.
Right.
And which obviously, everybody agrees he can't do.
Which one?
Everybody agrees he can't do that.
It's still
So no proof one way or the other. Hilkosloi extra, so therefore it's not possible. So therefore it's not possible for him to just stick his hands in and actually be able to do a smicha. So that's the point, in other words, this braisa, here's another way of looking at why this braisa is not necessarily a proof to all of.
So what are you going to use? He has to put his pressure from, top of each torso, but
yeah,
he cannot do it?
But he can't go into the azara to do it. Therefore, of necessity, if he's going to be doing that, the animal has to be brought into shayin nikana for him to do it.
That's okay.
That's under the circumstances, even though usually we say take it for smicha shchita, we should have the smicha done wherever the shchita is going to be done, and you can't do the smicha in the thickness of shayin nikana because that's part of the azara, per se. But here we have no choice because otherwise there's no way of doing it. It's interesting actually. The Rambam on the one hand paskins that smicha does have to be done b'chol koichai. On the other hand, he says that unlike what we're saying over here, that the Masorah sticks his hand in and does the smicha, which leads to the Lashon Mishnah and another Mepharshim discuss how can that be. Well, one thing is we're only in the middle of the discussion over here. The Gemara is going to end up saying anyway that one way of looking at it is that the smicha of the Masorah on the Oshim is not necessarily d'oraisa anyway. And if it's not d'oraisa, it doesn't have to be done b'chol koichai. In fact, as we're going to see soon, it can't be done b'chol koichai in that case.
If it's not
d'oraisa, then it would be using kodshim, it would be misusing kodshim for him to lean on it with his whole strength. So that's one way of understanding.
So therefore,
he just lay his hands on it gently like that. And in that case, you know, he's kol koichai. So this goes with what I was mentioning yesterday, that Rambam understands that bia b'miktas is not bia on a d'oraisa level. Fine, the Rabbanon is allowed, but under the circumstances, then we allow it. The Raiva disagrees with that and understands our Gemara to be saying that bia b'miktas is d'oraisa, is also d'oraisa after all. Fine. The question is my kasala. Okay, but fine. So the question is like this. When this Tana is saying that usually you have to have takeus the smicha shchita, usually you have to have the smicha is done immediately in the same place where the shchita is going to be done, except we're making an exception for the Masorah. So we have to figure, my kasala, what does this Tana hold as far as smicha and as far as shchita? E kasala smichas osham Masorah jara. No, the Tana of this Braisa, let me just quote it, of the Braisa. What does he hold as far as smicha, as far as the requirement for smicha, and as far as the requirement for keka for smicha shchita? E kasavar smichas osham masorah d'oraisa. If he holds that the leaning on the osham of the masorah is required d'oraisa, and he holds the keka for smicha shchita d'oraisa, and he holds that also that smicha should be done right before shchita, if he holds that that's also d'oraisa, Well then, why, so then in that case, then they're on an equal level. Leo Halismach Lahedia. Then why shouldn't he just go in and do smicha straight out, given that he has to do smicha b'chol koichos, and he said therefore just sticking in his hands is not going to be enough, and the Torah says he has to do smicha, and obviously the Torah knew at that point he's mechosa kiporim, because by definition he is. So obviously, therefore, the Torah is carving out an exception, the same way as the Torah is saying that he should stick in his ear and his thumb and his toe. So fine. So what are you looking for possibilities over here? If you're going to say that both things are required d'oraisa, then obviously the Torah is making an exception, that he actually goes into the Azara, does the smicha, and then goes back out to Shal Nicha until everything is done. Obviously, it seems the Torah would be permitting it, because there's no other choice.
Well, that's one of the possibilities.
Well, so that's the question. If the Tana of the Braita holds that way, then why is he saying that in this case we don't do that? We bring the animal into Shar Nikonah, he does smicha over there, then we bring it over to where it's going to be shechted and violate the rule of Tekef Smicha Shchita. If Tekef Smicha Shchita is required Daraita and the smicha is required Daraita, then you don't need all that rigmarole, obviously.
That's
what we have to figure out. Almond of Adab, you let him come in straight out and then do smicha. Zirachmana Omar, because the same Torah that says that normally a Tomei doesn't go into the Azara, the same Torah obviously is saying in this case that he does. How else are you going to do it? Almond of Adab Amasna, so Adab Amasna says you're right. On a Daraisa level, that is what he should be doing. However,
to go and do it.
However, Gzera, Shemiyayrub of Seed. However, the Chachamim, we can say that the Chachamim made a Gzera that the problem is, what if he takes too many steps? We learned back in Shavuos, we learned about the case where you have a person became Tomei in the Azara, where he has to go out by the shortest possible route. By the same logic over here, if this person, fine, let's say we're allowing him to step into the Azara on a Daraisa level to do his smicha, but then he would have to then go back out by the shortest possible route, because he's still of a chosen kiporim, so the blood is sprinkled. If he were to take even one extra step in the wrong direction, then he would be chayav kares. Then he would be chayav karis, because the Tomei going into this mikdash unnecessarily. So midrabanan, we don't tell him just the midrabanan, we don't have him do that. Midrabanan, rather, therefore, we'll bring the animal to him, and we'll have to violate the take of missile of shit. That's Rav Adam Amasna. Ikadamri, or another version, is Amr Rav Adam Amasna. It's like this.
So we compromise it from one rule to another.
So the Ikadami, another version, is Omar of Adar Amasna. No, the reason why the Braita is saying to do like this, to bring it into Shar Nikonah, is we can say like this, the Tana of this Braita doesn't necessarily hold that both these things are Daraisa. The Tana of this Braita may hold Smichas Asham Masurah Daraisa, that the Masurah has to do Smicha on his Asham, that is Daraisa. Just like any other Chassas, any Chassas you do Smicha on. Well, Chassas, but the take of L'smicha L'shchita is L'smicha Shchita is Lav D'Araisa. You can argue that this Braita holds that not necessarily is the idea of take of L'smicha Shchita, not necessarily is that D'Araisa. Yes, we have a Hekish between them, but we said before about that Hekish, we said that Ma'smicha B'tahurim, Ma'shchita B'tahurim, we said that's really only Midrabanan, Midaraisa, Tomei can chef, but only Midrabanan we prevent him because he might touch the meat. By the same logic over here, we can say that the Hekish doesn't really exist on a Daraisa level. The Tana of this Braita. It's present, but we can say that the Torah is not saying it is a hetish. The reason why the Torah is telling that, or we can say actually that the Torah is telling us the hetish for a different purpose. Let's say it can be as like I was going to say actually now that it can be, for example, to teach us that both smicha and shchita have to be done by tahorim. Whatever, it can be used for other purposes. Not necessarily it's going to be used to teach us teicha for smicha shchita. That concept may be only d'rabbanan. So therefore, we'll override that in a case like this. Because he can't go into the Azara as a Tomei, therefore we'll have him do smicha because that's required on a Daraisa level. But we'll have him do it. So then we'll move the animal to where it's supposed to be shechted because we'll override the Dirabbanan of take it for smicha shechita. The Gemara says maybe. However, I have a contradiction to that. So you're telling me that you're saying that you're telling me that take it for smicha shechita is not necessarily Daraisa. It's maybe only Dirabbanan. But we learned in a braisa before, we learned that back on Lamed Beis yesterday, when the pasuk says the samach v'shachat, again we have the tekesh between the smicha and the shchita, from which we learn ma smicha b'tahorin, ha shchita b'tahorin, just like smicha is a given, can only be done by somebody who's tahor, because, again, the smicha has to be lifnei Hashem, it has to be done inside the Azara, and he has to be mostly inside the Azara in order to be able to do it for chol koichos. So, and therefore we learn from that, but the same thing the POSIX is telling us that we argue that the Braiser said that the Shkita also has to be done by Tahorim on a Doraisa level. Unlike what we said before, that it can be done by Tmei and Doraisa, and it's only Dirabonim, we don't allow them. The Yamit Lav Doraisa. Now, if you're going to tell me that Smicha is not required on this Korban Doraisa, the Tmei and Nami Mashkachas law, then it's possible to have smicha be done by tmeim, because again, they don't, it's not a given that smicha has to be done by tahorim again, and you could have it to be done by tmeim, because they could be standing outside the azara.
Is it hekesh,
No, they're fine with the hekesh, but we're trying to say it's a given that smicha has to be done by tahorim because they have to be in the azara. But if you're telling me smicha is not required daraisa, then it doesn't, they don't necessarily have to be in the azara. They don't necessarily have to be doing it at all. Why are you telling me as a given that smicha always has to be done by tahorim, and therefore that you can learn from it a hekesh about shchita if smicha doesn't even always have to be done on a daraisa level?
Where would we get that from?
What do you mean, where would we get that from?
It doesn't have to be necessarily, it's not necessarily all right.
That's what we're asking. If you're telling me, you're telling me, you're an Adab Amasna, that the Tana of all braisa before, that the Masurda holds that the smicha on the Osham Masurda is not necessarily daraisa. Or rather, smicha is daraisa, but take it for smicha shchita. So the question is that. Sorry, not the smicha. If you're telling me that, we said before that if it's given that smicha has to be done by tahor, now what would make us say that? Sorry, I misstated that. Okay. Like, if you say that smicha is a given and has to be done by tahor, what would make us say that? What would make us say that is that the smicha has to, number one, that the smicha has to be done lifnei Hashem, meaning in the Azara, but second of all, also that it has to be taken for smicha shtita, that it has to be done immediately before the shtita, immediately in the same place as the shtita, therefore again it has to be done in the Azara. Tmeim can't be in the Azara, therefore that would necessarily mean that the smicha has to be done, can't be done by Tmeim. But if you argue that midaraisa, you don't require taken for smicha shtita, then you don't need all that. You could do the smicha, then move the animal over to where it's supposed to go, and there's no proof that smicha can only be done by tahorim. But if this other braisa is telling us that smicha has to be done by tahorim, that implies that it has to be taken for smicha shrita, as required on a daraisa level. And you're telling me, Rabada Ramasna, that not. Ella April.
So what do you conclude?
Well, therefore, so we have a contradiction. Rabbi Adar Amasna is saying that take up a smicha shchita is not required on a daraisa level. That is why, in the case of the Masurda, we override it and have the smicha done in Shai Nikaner and then move the animal over to Sofer and shecht it. But from this braisa that we quoted before, it seems that take up a smicha shchita is required on a daraisa level. Ella April. You're right. Flip around what Rabbi Adar Amasna is saying. Smicha tasham Masurda lav daraisa. The take of the smicha to shchita daraisa. You're right. You can argue the other way around. You can say that the smicha on the asham mitzvah is not daraisa, and the take of the smicha shchita is. So therefore, in other words, why should the smicha of the asham mitzvah be different from any other asham? The reason is, Rashi says, because this is a special kind of asham. Usually an asham is brought, a person did a certain avera, asham zelus, asham ne'ilos, etc., and therefore he's bringing an asham. Here, the Osham is coming to be mashered, to make him no longer a Mechusa Kapara, to make him be able to enter the Azara or be able to eat Kodesh. So that is not the same kind of Osham as other kinds of Oshamas. Therefore, you can argue that Minas Torah, he does not have to do Smicha on it. That's what Rashi is saying. Tostop Hashem before Allah Hashem is sharing him all Allah Hashem. Since this Osham is only coming to be mashered him, rather than to be mechaker on him like other ones, then therefore not necessarily is it in the same category. Tosfos asks on that. Tosfos finds that difficult to say based on Gemaras that we're going to have later, or based on in Ezra Makoimon and a Gemara in Yevamos that implies the Gemara implies over there that this Osham is not any different than a regular Osham in requiring smicha.
And then?
So then in that case, what we're left with, what do you mean? That we're saying over here, that the smicha of the Asham Masurda is not daraisa because it's different from other Asham. According to the Tosfos says, based on these other Gemaras, it seems that it is.
And so therefore,
the Tosfos leaves it as a question on Rashi. Anyway, the point is, but we can argue that Rav Ada bar Machzen would say that the Braisa at least saying Teikah posmicha shchita is the Araisa. So therefore, again, so in this particular case, he doesn't really need to do smicha, and therefore Tosfos says, in fact, he wouldn't do a full smicha with his full kayak. In fact, if he would, it would be avoided with kachin. He'd be doing mundane work with kachin, which you're not allowed to do. Therefore, he would just lean on it gently, unlike in the usual case. But nevertheless, so what we would do is that we would then after doing that quasi smicha sort of then because take it for smicha shrita, really we should check it right there. But again, according to the Yosef of Yehuda, we can't stop when it's further away. Therefore, of necessity, therefore we move it and check it in stop. Whereas according to Rebbe, maybe you wouldn't need that because he could do a gentle smicha over there, which just requires sticking in his hands. If we say Biyah B'mitzvah is not Shmabiyah, again, if we're going back to if we say according to Ullah that it is, then you can't do that either, then there's nothing to talk about, then you have to bring it into the gate, and he does whatever kind of smicha it is over there, and then you move it. Ravina Omar, okay. Going back now to what Ullah said, that about Biyah B'mitzvah, where all this time...
I say that both smicha and kekeh is Nidoraisa.
That's what we said before. If they were both Daraisa, then we would obviously make an exception and allow him to go fully into the Azara to do the Smicha and then withdraw the Shah Nechamer. The fact that we're not allowing him to do that means one or the other of them can't be Daraisa. So we thought that the taker for Smicha Shchita is not Daraisa, but that's contradicted by the other Braisa.
Therefore
it has to be now that the Smicha of the Asha of the Asha Masura is not Daraisa. Okay. We're taking it.
Smicha
and most korbanos is daraisa, but in this particular case, that's a different kind of asher than it. Now, Ravina Amar like this. All this time we've been talking about Ullah's statement, Yiv Mitzvah Shmabia, and we were assuming that he means for all purposes, meaning in other words, also for the purpose that if a Tomei does Yiv Mitzvah, then he's Chayav Koreis just as much as if he did full Biyah. That was the basis of this whole discussion so far. Why are we making an exception for the Korban Pesach? Do we make an exception for the Masorah, etc.? Now Ravina says I have a different explanation of this whole thing.
We do make an exception for the Korban Pesach.
Sure, we said before that in fact we talked about even when the Masorah was also a Balkeri and now is a Tavul Yom. So that led us into a discussion where fine, maybe a Tavul Yom going into the Azara is only also the Rabbanim from Yerushalayim's time. But we talked about that a Masorah once we have a Heter for him for his Taras and we also a Master for his Keri. Yeah, that was all yesterday. But anyway. So all this time, though, we were assuming that what Ullah is saying in the name of Rish Lakish is actually, is it talking about for all purposes, even as far as Kare. That when Ullah is saying, Biyah B'mitzvah Shma Biyah, that if a person comes in, that if a person sticks in a hand, what do you mean every korban? For every tummy. For every tummy. If he were to stick his hand into the Azara, then we were assuming all this time that Ullah is saying it means he'd be high of Kare. But Ravina says here is a different explanation, which then removes some of the questions that we were asking before, in Malchus Ismail. No, we were actually what Ullah is saying in the name of Rish Lakish is only as regards Malchus. So he would get Malchus if he puts his hand in, but he wouldn't get Kareis. So therefore, in other words, because he says, where do we learn the whole concept of Biyah B'mitzvah? That's again, we learned it from B'chol Kodesh Le'Sigah Ve'Elam Mikdash Le'Sabay by Yehudah. Well, there doesn't say anything about Kodesh, it just says you shouldn't do it, which implies a lot, which implies Malchus. But not necessarily that you'd actually get Kodesh, right? So therefore, that answers the question there. We asked the question before on Lamed Beis yesterday about the Masorah who also had an emission of Keri and now is a Tavul Yom, how are we making an exception for him? The answer is because there's no chiyuv kares over there, whereas to not bring the korban pesach involves kares, so then we're overriding one in favor of the other. We asked, how can you override one thing of kares in favor of another thing of kares? And we had to find answers to that. But now, according to Rabbinah's explanation, you don't need that. There's no kares involved for Biyah B'mitzvah. The maximum penalty possible is malchus. Okay, Tosfos brings up actually the interesting point, which is, after all, though, you have, there is, in that case, according to that, it comes out, there's a loisef there. There's also the eser, that Tmeim have to stay out of the bit mitzvah. And we know that an ester is not dose by a lois of an ester. So how are you allowing the ester of the carbon paste stuff to be dose by a lois of an ester? And the answer is toast. Yes, but an ester that involves chorus, namely the carbon paste stuff, is strong enough to be dose and ester and a lois.
Just for the carbon
paste stuff, because it involves chorus, which is much more stringent. Robin Omer of Abo. Robin says in the name of Rav Abo. Here's another explanation of what Ullah is saying in the name of Rosh Lakish. L'inyan tomish nagav kodesh. No, this statement of Ullah about in the name of Rosh Lakish about bia b'mitzvah. No, he's not actually saying that he's getting malchus. What he's doing is he is using that pasuk to teach us that if a tomei touches kodeshim, then he gets malchus. So nothing to do with Viva Mitzvah. In other words, according to this last thing, according to what Robin is saying over here, when we started saying that Ullah said in the name of Rish Lakish that if a Tomei sticks his hand in, then Loisa, no, not necessarily would he get Malchus, much less Kari. All it means is that he's learning from that positive it would mean, in other words, that he's saying that who gets Malchus, not the one who partially goes into this mikdash, but rather the one who touches kodesh.
How do you know that?
Because we're going to see now. We're going to have a discussion, which we also had in Makkos, of how Rish Lakish is going to learn the pasuk to say that the pasuk is not teaching us that somebody who goes in that a tomei who goes into this mikdash gets malchus, but rather that a tomei who touches kodesh gets shenagav kodesh. Yeah. So therefore,
he gets what?
He gets malchus. That's what Rish Lakish is.
As opposed to?
Before all this time, we were saying that all those quoting Rish Lakish are saying that a Tomei who does Bia B'mikdash gets Malchus.
Right.
Now we're saying, no, that's not what Rish Lakish meant. He meant that a Tomei who touches Kodeshim gets Malchus. A Tomei who has Bia B'mikdash, the Pasuk does not say that he gets Malchus.
What's the difference with Bia?
The Ishmael, because we have a discussion like this. Let's go through and we'll see how Rish Lakish is going to understand the Pasuk. Tomei shenagav kodesh. If a tomei person touches kodesh, Rish Lakish on the loiker, Rav Yechonon on the ainu loiker. Rish Lakish says he gets malchus. Rav Yechonon says he does not. Rish Lakish on the loiker because the pasuk says the whole kodesh. Let's see that the pasuk says about the yeledis. The pasuk says she should not touch kodesh, and that means, in other words, exactly what it sounds like. And if she does, she's chayav malchus, just like any other wife. But Rav Yechonon, I'm not like it. Rav Yechonon says she doesn't get malchus because hahu b'trumah says. Because that pasuk is not talking about kodshim at all. That pasuk is talking about truma. That she's not allowed to, it means that she's not allowed to eat truma during all that time. Tigah does not necessarily mean touching. It means that she's not allowed to eat truma during that time. Because what it is Rashi explains, in other words, this is a special case which is called a tvulas yoim orva. What happens is, the Torah tells us in Parashat Tzaddikah, a woman gives birth for the first 7 days for a boy, 14 for a girl, she's tamei. After that, she can go to the mikveh. Any bleeding that she has during the 33 days for a boy or 66 for a girl after that is dam toyah. She's still mutter to have relations with her husband during that time. Nowadays we don't, but anyway, as on a daraita level, and originally did Abraham, she was.
That's between what day?
Between days, after day 7 and before day 40 for a boy, after day 14 for a girl, and after day 18 and before day 80 for a girl, any blood that she has is dam toyar. The Torah says, zedakakotir, that's tar. So she mutters her husband. However, during all that time, she's called tvulat yoim oro. It's as if, like, she went to the mikvah, let's say, in the case of a boy, after 7 days. But it takes unlike the normal case, you go to the mikvah, and that night you're completely tahor after Heir Shemesh. Here it takes 33 days for it to not be a tzvulah. 33 days, or 66 for a girl, to not be a tzvulah yoim.
She's still considered tzvulah yoim.
So during all that time, she's a tzvulah yoim, and as a tzvulah yoim, she's not allowed to eat truma. Right, obviously. Yeah. So Rav Yechonon says that pasuk is talking about truma. So not necessarily is it talking about touching or eating kodshim, like Rish Lakish says. It's talking about she's not allowed to eat truma. So Shitra Mukubetis brings over here, and Tosfos brings in Makos that what it means is when you say betruma, when Rabbi Yochanan says betruma, means that yes, if she touches truma during that period, she will make it possible. That's what it means. The whole kodesh leisiga, she shouldn't touch truma because if she does, she'll make it possible. But not necessarily, not necessarily talking about kodeshim at all. I mean, obviously, yeah, if she touched kodeshim, so Tosfos learns on that basis. Then in that case, by kodeshim, it would be a kavachomer that she'd pass them because kodeshim have a higher level of kedusha than truma. They can go all the way to revi, which truma can only go to shlishi. But the pasuk doesn't have to spell that out. There are some of the Rishonim talk about that maybe not actually. Maybe the Pesach is telling us that she's not allowed to eat Truma and not telling us about Kodshim because by Truma you have kind of a bigger Chiddush because you have more Kula in it. Therefore, the Pesach has to more warn us off, has to warn her off that rather than Kodshim. All right, whatever. Anyway, the point is, so to continue with the discussion, so according to the Shlokish, are you telling me that this pasuk is coming to teach us that if a Yoledes or any other Tavul Yoim touches Kodshim, they get Malchus? Doesn't the Shlokish need this pasuk to teach us the din that if a person eats Kodshim while they're Tomei, then they get Malchus? Never mind touching it, in other words, eating it, then they get malchus. The itmar is, in fact, we have a discussion.
Uses the word naga.
That's what we're going to see, right? Yeah, fine, but the word naga, we're going to see how it means. We'll see, right? So, the itmar, as hara lo ochob sa kodesh minayin, we learned in Makkos that with a tome, it's kodeshim, they get malchus, but how do we know that? Where is the azhara? Rish Lakish says because of the spotting, B'chol Kodesh Leisiga, where we'll see in a minute how Rish Lakish uses the word Tigas mean eating. Rabbi Yechanan says no, it's because Tony Bardala, it's because Bardala taught a Braita that says, ask your Tum'ose, Tum'ose, maybe as Mikdash. We learn it by Xavier Shavar using the word Tum'ose in connection with going into the Beit Mikdash. It says by a person who is kodshim by tumas aguf, it says the tum osay olav, that a tumor is on him. By a tumor going to this message, it says o tum osay boy. Ma lahalan onash v'hizir. Now, when it comes to bias mikdash, you have both. You have a pasuk that says to not do it. Namely, the pasuk says in next week's parish actually, the lo yitamor is machaneim. They should not make the machne tomei. So that's an azhara. That's a lav for tmeim to go into the zone where they're not allowed to. So there's an oynish where the pasuk says they get kares if they do. Afkan onash v'hizir, the same way. The Gzeira Shava teaches us that when it comes to eating kodshim with tumas aguf, also there's not only a punishment that the Torah says, but there's also an azhara, even though the Torah doesn't spell it out. We learn it from the Gzeira Shava.
And therefore,
Rabbi Yechanan says, I don't need the word b'chol kodesh leisiga to teach us that. So according to him, you have the word b'chol kodesh leisiga to teach us that she's not allowed to eat truma. But according to Rish Lakish, according to Rish Lakish doesn't accept that. He says that you're learning from B'chol Kodesh Leisiga and you can't eat Kodeshim. So how is he also able to use that same pasuk to teach us that if a Tomei touches Kodeshim, they get Malchus? How is he learning both? The answer is, Rish Lakish would answer like this. Tomei Shinaga B'Kodesh, yes, but it's like this. When it comes to the Tomei who touches Kodeshim, Mid'afke Rachmana B'loshin Negiya, now, the answer is like this. Since the pasuk expresses it using the word tiga, using the word negia, which means touching, then therefore that teaches us touching. But in addition, we can also learn, because as part of la'ochel, where do we also learn that there's a warning where the Torah is telling us not to eat kodshim when you tome, is midi itkash kodesh l'mikdash. It's because in that pasuk you have a hekesh between kodshim and the bit mikdash. Namely, what does the pasuk say? B'chol kodesh l'tiga v'ala mikdash l'sobe. Don't touch kodshim and don't go into the Beis Mikdash. So Rish Lakish would say, therefore we have again that, so Rish Lakish would say like this, the Hekesh teaches us as follows. Going into the Beis Mikdash when you're Tomei involves Kares. Therefore, when the Torah is also telling you in that pasuk not to do something with kodshim, it has to be something that would involve Kares. Touching kodshim doesn't make you chayav Kares. Therefore, necessarily it has to be talking about eating. On the other hand, since it uses the word kiga, that also teaches us you're not allowed to touch them, and if you do, you're chayav malchus. No. So that's how, not so therefore, Rish Lakish will say you can learn both things from the same problem. One from the fact that it used the word kiga rather than to eat, and the other from the fact that you have a hekesh with the Beis Mikdash where there can't be kares for just touching. There can only be kares for eating.
two things.
So therefore, you're able to touch. You're not allowed to touch, and if you do, you get malchus. Mm-hmm. And number two, you're not allowed to eat, and if you eat, you get karis. That's where Shlokas will say you can learn them both from that one.
And therefore, you don't.
So therefore, so. So that answers the question. How can Rish Lakish use the pasuk of Chol Kodesh Leisgicha to teach us that you get malchus for touching kachim when you're tummy? Because he's able to learn that from the fact that it says Leisgicha. How does he know that also that you're chayev kodesh for eating kachim with Shumas Aguf? Because the pasuk makes a hekesh with going into this message.
So from one pasuk
you're learning two things. But the important point is, going back to what we were saying before, is that Rogan is saying in the name of Rav Avohu, and therefore, Rish Lakish is not learning from that pasuk, therefore, anything about Bia B'Mikdash. He's saying the Hekesh, when that pasuk mentions Ve'el HaMikdash Lo Yisavai, it's not to teach us another lie about going into this Mikdash. It's rather, and therefore you can't learn anything from it about Bia B'Mikdash. It's to teach us that the thing in the pasuk that it says not to do has to be something, or one of the things that it says in the pasuk not to do has to be something that involves kares, namely not eating kodesh.
Not bia.
So no, nothing to do with bia b'mikdash, right? So that's a third way of understanding. So we have so-called three ways of understanding what Olaf said in the name of Rish Lakish. One is that bia b'mikdash is shma bia for all purposes, even kares. The second one is only as far as a lab, only as far as Seer Malchus, but not as far as Kareis. And the third one is neither of the above. Not Rutu Bibimus. Not Kareis, not Seer Malchus, but only, not Kareis, not Seer Malchus, but only that you're learning from that classic a whole different din about eating Kodshim or about touching Kodshim.
You learn from that?
You learn from that, from the way the pasuk phrases it, that eating kodshim would make him chayav kares, and that touching kodshim would make him chayav malchus. Yeah. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that. Rabbi Yochanan agrees about eating kodshim that you're chayav kares, but he learns it from a different place. He learns it from the Gzeira Shavah Shemase. And as far as touching kodshim, he says there's no lav on that. The b'chol kodesh leisiga means you're not allowed to eat truma, not that you're not allowed to touch it. Okay. Tanya Kava says in Rish Lakish, we learn a braisa in accordance with Rish Lakish. That we learn from this pasuk that you're not allowed to eat kodshim when you're tummy. The pasuk is called kodesh leisiga, azhara lo'ochel. It says that the woman who gave birth is not allowed to touch kodesh. That means not touching it, it means eating it. So she's not allowed to eat it. After omer azhara lo'ochel, so you're saying that it means that she's not allowed to eat it. Oyeina elu l'negeya. Maybe it means that she's not even allowed to touch it. Therefore, the pasuk shouldn't touch kodshim, and she shouldn't go into the mikdash. Makish kodesh l'mikdash, which therefore gives us, as Rish Lakish said, a hekesh between going into the kodesh and between doing something with kodesh and going into the mikdash.
That's where you learn it from.
That's his hekesh. Mam mikdash dovash yeshva netilos neshama. Just like what is with the bit mikdash, it has to be something where his life is going to be taken away, namely that he gets kodesh, and that's only for entering the bit mikdash when he's tummy. Ah, kodesh dovash yeshva netilos neshama. The same way when the pasuk says v'chol kodesh leisiga, it must mean something where if the person violates that, they're going to get kodesh. And you can't get kodesh for only touching something. You can only get kodesh for eating. Therefore, obviously, that's what Gemara is going to say. Even again, Natilus Neshama Mi'ika. For just touching, there's no Natilus Neshama. You never find any place in the Pasuk that for touching something, you get Kares. Whenever the Pasuk says that thing, the various things that the Pasuk says that a person is high Kares form, and you have, obviously, there's not just forbidden foods. There's also Arayas and other such things, but any one of them, any of the ones that involve foods is always eating them, not touching them. And now, obviously, but that's a different kind of thing. That's a different category. And there, it's not just touching either. There, it's having relations. Oh, yeah. So just touching, there's no nechilas neshama. Ela ba'achila. Obviously, therefore, so the braisa says, that's the point. And that's the shalakish point, is that the pasuk must be talking about eating, if it's making a hekesh with the mikdash. Therefore, we see from that, that b'chol kodesh leisiga means that you're not allowed to eat kodeshim, and if you do, you chayav kodesh. On the other hand, again, as the shalakish says, since, on the other hand, the pasuk chose to put phrase it using the word loisiga, which means touching, then we can also learn from it a lab about actually touching kachin and learn from it that you have malchus for touching kachin.
That is easy to understand as the meaning that the siga is to eat.
Right. Well, it means both. In other words, it means
you have the hekesh, you can understand that loisiga
means to eat. But in addition, On the other hand, the positive didn't need to give us a heckish. It could have said flat out, kodesh lo soichal or whatever. Instead, it uses the word tiga. So therefore, Shlacher says, in addition, you can also learn from that an azhara about touching kachim when you're talking.
The other way around. I mean, if it says tiga, you learn not to touch.
No, primarily we're learning from it that it means, not to eat. But secondarily also, we can learn from it by the heckish. But secondarily, because it says tiga rather than toichal, then yeah. Okay. So therefore, so that's no contradiction on Rish Lakish, because he is in fact able to learn both those dinim from the one topic. Okay, the Gemara says though, that happy me boiler Thomas Shahab Bakodish Lakhnizika. Still though, doesn't Rish Lakish need this pasuk for Hakodish Lakhnizika to teach us that if a tame person eats meat from Kodshim before the blood was sprinkled, that they're over on a lav and they're chayav malchus? The Itma, because in fact we have a discussion about that. Now, we know if a Tomei eats Sau Kodesh after Zrika, then we said he's Chayav Kodesh. What happens if he eats it before the Zrika? Is he Chayav anything for that? I mean, nobody is supposed to be eating it from it before Zrika. So, the Isma, Tomei She'ochob Sau Kodesh with Nezrika, Rish Lakish on Maloika, Rabbi Yechanan on Maloika. Rish Lakish says he gets Malchus, Rabbi Yechanan says he does not. Rish Lakish on Maloika, because again, B'chol Kodesh Le'Sigak, the Pasuk says she shouldn't touch, which we said before means also to eat, any kodshim, therefore any kodshim means loshna lifnei zrika v'loshna la'acha zrika. So it doesn't matter whether before or after zrika, the same lav applies to both. Rabbi Yechanan ma'ena loika, k'detani ba'udala asya chamasya chamasya, because Rabbi Yechanan says he doesn't get malchus, because where am I learning that a tomei is not allowed to eat kodshim? We're learning it from the gzeda shava chamasya chamasya. The chik cost of ahu la'acha zrika, and that cost of about not being allowed to eat from the korbanos, where it says the word is from osebay, is talking about a time when the tahorim are allowed to eat it, namely after zrika. So therefore we have no basis to extend it to before zrika. So that's why Rabbi Yechanan would say you don't get that. A tamei who eats the kodshim before zrika doesn't get malchus. Anyway, again, because he can't extend his Zeta Shabbat to Mase, which is teaching us the Chiyuv Kares, and then which is not the Chiyuv Kares, which is teaching us the lab for a Tomei eating Kodshim, that's talking about after Zrika. So there's nothing to tell us that it applies before Zrika as well. So the point is, again, that apparently we have yet another din that Rish Lakish is learning from this pasuk for Kodesh Lestika. He's learning, in addition, besides for the two dinim that we said before, about Tomei Shenaga B'Kodesh, and about Tomei She'ochol, and about Tomei She'ochol Kodesh, Rish Lakish seems to be learning a third thing from that pasuk, that if a Tomei eats from Kodesh before Zrika, that he's Chayav Malchus. So how is he learning that as well? The answer is, The Gzeira Shava can't be extended. Rish Lakish isn't using the Gzeira Shava. But still, you can't learn multiple dinim from a pasuk unless you have extra words in it or something. What are the extra words over here? The answer is in Kain, Lemakura Bakkoidish. Yes, but if the pasuk only wanted to teach us the two dinim that we said so far, the pasuk didn't have to use the word Bechol Kodesh. It could have said Bekoidish. In Kodeshim, she should not touch. And we would understand from that the two dinim, that it means that you can't eat them and Chayav Kodesh if you do, and you can't touch them and you Chayav Malchus. My Bechol Kodesh, why did it say Bechol Kodesh? From that we can learn a different thing. Shnamina Tauti, from that we can learn two different dinim. We're actually now three different dinim we have. That Rish Lakish is learning from the same pasuk. That you're not allowed to touch them, and if you do, you Chayav Malchus. That you are not allowed to eat them before Zrika, and if you do, you Chayav Malchus. And you're not allowed to eat them after Zrika, and if you do, you Chayav Kodesh, because that's where the heckish with
After Zrika,
you'd be Chayav Kodesh.
Before
it would be only Malchus. That's what Rish Lakish is saying. So therefore, we're able to learn both of those. We're able to learn all three of those things. But the Gemara is saying over here, Tauti, because we're setting aside the one about we're setting aside the Kodesh one. We're focusing on the two Lavas, on the two Malchus that Rish Lakish is learning from the one Pasuk. Number one, if you touch Kodeshim when you Tomei, and number two, if you eat them before Zrikas Damim when you Tomei. So those two things he's saying you can learn from that Pasuk that you're Chayav Malchus. Well, I mean, we have a few more minutes. We could try continuing on it. Why not? Okay. Gufa, getting back to what we said before. We mentioned in the course of the discussion, Tomei She'ochob Sakodesh, well, just now, we said Tomei She'ochob Sakodesh Lefnei Zrika, Rish Lakish Amar Loika, Rabbi Yechanan Amar Ein Loika. We're saying that if he ate it before the Zrika, Rish Lakish says he gets Malchus, Rabbi Yechanan says he doesn't. Amar Abayah, Machloikas with Tumas HaGuf. Now, this whole Machloikas, says Abayah, is talking about when the person was Tomei, that Rabbi Yechanan is going to say he doesn't get Malchus. Because again, he says that the Azhara is only referring to after Zrika, so therefore before Zrika there's no Azhara, therefore no Malchus. So that only refers to the person being Tomei. Al-Vatumas Basar, but if that the person was Tomei and the meat was Tomei, then Divrei Hakol Loike, then everybody would agree, even Rabbi Yechanan, that he does get Malchus for eating meat of a korban which is Tomei. Why is that? De'amah Kra, or De'amah Mar, I'll go to back change of the two, because the Pasuk says, or we learn in a Braisa, that the Pasuk says, V'habbasar, the Pasuk says, the whole Pasuk says over there, that the Pasuk is saying that a Tomei is not allowed, that you're not allowed to eat, the Pasuk is saying over there, that Tomei are not allowed to eat from the korban. But it says, V'habbasar, called Tahor Yechabbasar, the Pasuk starts off like this, V'habbasar ashayigar v'chol Tomei lo yachol, the meat of a korban that touches anything that's Tomei should not be eaten. That's a regular lab, so everybody agrees to that, and that's Malchus. And the Pasuk continues, V'habbasar, called Tahor Yechabbasar, as far as the meat, any Tahor can eat meat. So what is that extra word, V'habbasar, coming to teach us? L'rabbis, etzim o'levoina, that comes to add even wood, or even levoina, that they're able to become Tomei, even though they're not food. Wood and levoina are not food. Normally they shouldn't be able to become tomei. Levoina, it's a spice. It's a frankincense. They put it on carbonus mincha. They have a spoonful of it is brought. Two spoonfuls of it are brought with a shtei alachim every week. It's one of the components of the kshoda. Whatever, but it's not edible. It's not edible. So normally wood and levoina shouldn't be able to become tomei. But over here we have a concept called chibas hakodesh, that the preciousness of things of kodesh makes them able to become tomei, makes them as if they were food, and therefore that they're able to become tomei. So therefore, the lav b'nei achilinu. So now wood and levoina are not edible. But the pasuk is implying, with the extra word v'habbasar, that they're still able to become tamei, and that if a person were to eat them when he's tamei, then he'd be chayav malchus. And v'afilu hachi ravino kra, and the pasuk is still including them, even though they're not edible. So certainly, the meat before zrika is not any less than wood or levoina. If even wood and levoina are being included, that a person eats them when they're tamei, then how much more so meat before zrika? So therefore, even Rabbi Yechanan would have to agree to that and say that you'd be chayav malchus for eating the meat before zrika, for eating the meat before zrika if the meat is tamei. Then if the person is tamei, that was the machlokes before, but here we're talking about when the meat is tamei. That's a bayah. The Rava, Amar Rava says no, the other way around. Machlokes b'tumas haguf. The machlokes again, yes, between Rabbi Yechanan and Reish Lakish is the machlokes between them is when the person is tamei. But Rava would say, no, if the meat is Tomei, and it's before Zvichas Domim, then everybody would agree you don't get Malchus. My time, now why is that, Rava would say?
If the meat is Tomei,
but the person is Tahar,
and it's before
Zvichas Domim, Rava would say that everybody would agree you do not get Malchus. Now why is that? My time, Shivan Delek Korina, baby, to Mosai Olo. Since we can't apply to it what the pasuk says over there, that if a person is tomei and he eats it, he gets kare, because, as we said before, there's no basis to say that he should be chayav kare, because he's only chayav malchus.
Right.
So therefore, given the lacunin of even tumasa of nichrasa, since we can't apply to him the part of the pasuk that says that because his tumah is still upon him, therefore he gets kare, therefore, like korinim, maybe I bossa, she eats it, but I'll tell me, like awful. We also can't apply to it yet the pasuk that says that any meat that touches anything tamei should not be eaten, that you get malchus. Therefore, in other words, the whole concept only applies after Zrikas Damim. Before Zrikas Damim, kares doesn't apply yet for a person who's tamei. Therefore, the lav, when the meat is tamei, doesn't apply before Zrika either, says Rava. Next question.
Kares doesn't apply
because before Zrikas Damim, then the lav for Tumas Basar doesn't apply either.
They have to be at the same time for both?
That's what we're saying, because since it's all together in the pasuk over there, you have a hekesh over there.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay, question is, what about the brayta we just said, that even etzim olavoina are able to become tamei, and if a person eats them, he's chayav malchus. And again, like Abaye said, meat before zrika shouldn't be any less than that.
And if you say
the brayta, so much more about that. Yeah, exactly. The answer is, kli. Yes, but the case we're talking about over here is where the wood or the levoina was already placed in a kli shari. So the wood, for example, Rashi describes that, let's say, we know that the kohenim at various times have scooped coals off the mizbeach every morning before they brought the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur. Let's say he scooped up some wood together with them. In the case of the Levoina, if they were in the Bezichin, they're in the two spoons that go on the shulchan together with the lechem aponim. Once they're in there,
then they're
kodesh, and then you would even have a person to be chayav kodesh for eating them if he himself is tamei. So then, the kamisha kov or komatirav, once they're already became kodesh in a keli, then they're considered that all of the matirim have already been brought, and therefore, in other words, that they're able to be eaten at that point. Because Rashi brings a rule that we're going to have in the next parak that says when you have a component of a korban that has a matir that's not mus, that there comes there's a point before which you're not allowed to eat it, and afterwards you are. Then you have to wait until the matirin are brought. Only then does kodesh apply for eating it for eating it in the tumas hagul.
Right.
But if there's no matir, then as soon as it goes into a kli shoreis, then it has that rule. A similar point. Now, don't have any matirin because there's nothing needed in order for that wood to be brought on the mizbeach, or in order for that levoina to be brought on the mizbeach. Therefore, once they're in a kli shoreis, then immediately they're kodesh.
Why when they brought the kli shoreis? Why not before?
Because before they're in a kli shoreis, they have no kedusha hagul. So once they're in a kli shoreis, they have kedusha hagul. Then they're ready to be brought, and there's nothing further that needs to be done in order for them to be for their purpose to be used. So therefore, now at that point, if a tamei ate them, he would be chayav kodesh. Therefore, Rava says that's what the braita means. At that point, also, therefore, if they themselves were tamei, which they can become tamei because of chibas hakodesh, and somebody ate them, he would get malchus. But not that wouldn't prove from meat before zrika, where the machirin, which is the blood, hasn't been yet grown on the vein. The blood, so in a way, not like a bio who says that meat can't be any less edible than wood or levoina. Rava says the difference is wood and levoina have no matirin. Meat has matirin.
That's why
it's treated different. Bitznan, as in fact we learn in the Mishnah, kol sheyesh lematirin, anything that has a matir, you chayev on it because of tumah, mishikorva matirav, when the matirim, for example, the blood or the koyimets or what have you, are brought on the mizbeach, at that point the chiyuv kodesh kicks in. Anything that doesn't have matirin, like mur and levoina, misha kodesh for kli, then as soon as it becomes kodesh in a kli shareis, then immediately those rules apply. So therefore, Rava says, because there's no matirin.
It's right.
Yeah.
But putting it in the keli is as if you're bringing...
Then that's it. There's no more matirin. So therefore, at that point, it's already ready for what's supposed to be done with it. So therefore, if the person was tamei, he'd be chayav kodesh. And if the thing is tamei, then he'd chayav malchus. Okay, Tosfos talks about a different possibility over here, maybe, about with the wood. Maybe we're talking about over here. Tosfos is Kodesh Bakli. Tosfos says, are we talking about, for example, with the wood, that he uses an axe of Hekdish to chop it? The axe is not a Kli Shoreis, though. Because Tosfos brings on the basis of a din in Hilchos Me'ilah that distinguishes between an axe and an oila, for example, where an oila has to the gok and the axe doesn't. So then he brings what Rashi says about that he took wood along with the coals. But Rashi Tosfos says it's hard to understand that you're supposed to take coals that are very well burnt. How would you still have pieces of wood over there? But Tosfos says, okay, maybe we're not talking about over here. We're talking about Yom Kippur when he collects coals for the Ketores. Okay, then Tosfos ends up saying that maybe what we mean is over here, Kiddush Kli of Eitim means when they are designated that they are going to be, that these are going to be pieces of wood that are going to be placed, that are going to be taken by the Kohenim and placed by the Mizbeach, and placed on the Mizbeach. That's the Kiddush Kli is when you designate them for that purpose. Shisha Mukhabatis changes the word to not the mashli, but the mashafi, when they shape them into the piece. The gizrei eitim that are brought on the mizbeach, specifically the two pieces that are brought every morning and every afternoon that are carried in the mitzvah, that they bring two pieces of wood on the mizbeach, those have a certain shape and size to them. So when you make them into that size, Tosfos ends up saying, that's what we mean by kiddush kli as far as wood. So not like Rashi saying that they were on the mizbeach and then he picked them up using the fire pan. Not like Tosfos wanted to say to begin with when you first chop them, but rather when you shape them into the shape that they're going to be used for the shnei gizrei. So they have a certain size and a certain shape those are the specific kind that are used for the ma'arocha. They didn't just use wood of any random shape. They had them a certain shape and a certain standard shape. I don't remember exactly, but I think they were an amma by an amma and a thickness. I don't remember the exact depth. The thickness of So there's like a certain dimension that they add. So when you make them into that dimension, that's the Kiddush tree. Then, yeah, that's what I suppose. Yeah.